Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This year's snowstorms were a game changer, from dampening or delaying the risk of devastating wildfires to recharging the groundwater and filling up our reservoirs. Every single snowflake was desperately needed. Now that we're deep into summer, all of that snow has turned into water, giving California's drought-stricken landscape new life. Agriculture is thriving again, and salmon populations are improving. Burn scars are showing signs of rebirth, and historic native lands overrun by decades of logging and ranching are being revived. There's no better example of the impact and importance of snowmelt than the Feather River. While the Feather may not be the most well-known river in California, like the Sacramento, it is vital to the overall health of the state. The San Francisco Chronicle recently traced the snowmelt's path from the headwaters of the Feather River all the way into the San Francisco Bay. The vivid digital piece tells the story of the so-called Big Melt. Natural resources reporter Curtis Alexander and photographer Carlos Avila Gonzalez spent 4 months following the Big Melt and join us with more about the benefits and the impact for all of us. Welcome to you both. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Curtis, I want to start with you. Before we get into the reporting, take us behind the scenes a little bit. Your report calls the Feather River one of the most important rivers in the state. What piqued your interest?
Yeah, as you noted, it's not the most popular river in the state. It's not the longest. It's not the fastest flowing. But it is one of the most important for any number of reasons, for drinking water, for farming and ranching, for hydroelectric power generation, for Native American significance, for recreation. The list goes on. And it's also just an incredibly beautiful river. And, you know, I will say that in terms of all the benefits that these rivers provide, the Feather is emblematic of all river watersheds in the state. They provide a lot of benefits, not only in the regions that they flow, but because the water is pumped and flows across the state, they're benefiting farms and cities from the Oregon border to Southern California. Mm.
Carlos, you're the visual arm in this. There's so much to cover. I mean, as Curtis said, I mean, the Feather River starts, you know, just south of the Oregon border. It goes to the headwaters of the San Francisco Bay. What conversations did you have about where to begin?
Yeah, that was actually at the very beginning, we had really not mapped out anything and basically got the starting gun to go get this project started literally 2 days before the final snowstorm. So we had to rush up there and just start getting footage and finding ways to, you know, really show the impact of the tremendous snowpack that we had. So within 2 days, I'm rushing up to Mount Lassen, to the places where I could get into, because it was just so inundated with snow. I couldn't even stop on some roads to get pictures that I really wanted to get, because the pullout lanes were, you know, 5-6 feet deep in snow. You know, and it was really just at the very beginning, you know, just capturing that and getting that last snowfall and getting the things that were going to eventually lead into the, you know, more visual elements of the story further down the river, because we had to have a place setter. And beginning up at Mount Lassen was really our goal, showing some of those 20-foot, 30-foot high snowbanks on the side of the road. You know, trying not to fall in the snow too often, or, you know, I'm a pretty big guy, so I kept finding myself waist deep in some of these drifts. But yeah, and then, you know, once we set the table, it was just about a matter of finding the places where we needed to really focus the human element, the people, the communities that were impacted by this. And then we started to really flesh out the little nodes that we really wanted to touch upon and find the people that you know, showed those the best.
This project took 4 months, you know, and I can imagine during that 4 months, you're just keeping your head down, churning away. You know, Carlos, when you closed in on those 4 months and you were just touching upon the very beginning when you had to rush up there with tons and tons of snow, you know, how did you look back on the reporting project?
You know, I really felt really good about it, because I think we had gone up there with such a clean slate. That was really just a you know, an open field for us to kind of fill. And I think we got in touch with the right people who knew where to go, what to do, who to talk to, and gave us contacts that really humanized these elements of the story. I was really happy with the, you know, the work we did along the Middle Fork, because that was a real struggle, just being able to get into some of these areas because it is so inaccessible. And also just, you know, the Greenville, the burn scar of the Dixie Fire was just, you know, heartbreaking to see some of these folks rebuilding out there. And just knowing that it's been years for them trying to get this done, and then to get, you know, kind of swamped by all this snow. But yeah, it was, you know, seeing little things like the salmon, being released into the San Francisco Bay was really cool. But also being able to see how they're, the folks up at the hatchery at Oroville were taking the time to get these fish healthier. And, you know, it's all this amazing process to, you know, to bring this all together.
Mm. The way that the project, the piece, is laid out is vivid. It's very interesting. Curtis, you're a natural resources reporter, so, you know, you have a good amount of familiarity with the Feather River and its impact. And you laid out this reporting by breaking it up into sections. You know, Carlos touched upon some of them, the North Fork, then the Middle Fork, then the Sacramento Valley Delta, and then finally the San Francisco Bay. What struck you most, you know, during this trajectory of months long reporting?
Well, there was a lot that sort of reinforced what I'd known about the Feather River and its importance. As you mentioned, it's an incredibly diverse watershed, starting up where the Cascades from the Pacific Northwest sort of peter out and the Sierra Nevada picks up. It's just a few thousand square miles of mountains that sends snow and creek water down several branches through canyons and vast meadows and thick forests. You know, one of the things that struck me, and we had kind of known this, but you don't really realize this until you're up there, is just how much of this vast watershed burned. You know, there were, you know, Northern California, you know, historically was this really wet, cold place that didn't see these big mega fires that were associated with like Southern California and the Central and Southern Sierra. But over the past 5 years, more than half of the watershed has burned. We had the Camp Fire in 2018, which until the Maui fires was the deadliest fire in the past 100 years in the U.S. And then 2 years ago, we had the Dixie Fire, which approached 1 million acres. And that fire has really affected the people and the landscape, but the people who live up there. Many have had to move out because their homes burned or their communities burned or they lost their place of work. I remember one conversation I had with a guy named Larry Yoakum in Greenville. That community was devastated by the Dixie Fire. And, you know, he was up there one of the times we were up there. And he's been forced to move outside of Redding, which is more than at the outskirts of Redding, which is more than an hour away. But he comes up to Greenville as often as he can just to try to get that sense of connection. He's kind of hoping to rebuild. He's begun the process, hasn't gotten very far, and he admits that he might not rebuild. But it's just sort of that hope that is keeping him going. And there's just a lot of people that are just finding ways to try to put their life back together.
Yeah. You know, when you're talking about what used to be, you know, lush, green, you know, what areas? I mean, an interesting statistic in your reporting, I mean, you said that 75%, I believe, of California's rain, it falls north of Sacramento, yet 80% of water demand is south of Sacramento. And this has long been a contentious issue when it comes to water. You know, how is that impacting people who live in Greenville or live in Sierra or Plumas counties? You know, knowing that, you know, those water demands still exist south of us.
I think people in the north are happy to share the water because they've historically gotten so much of it. But as you mentioned, it is a contentious issue. And as we have increasing droughts, water is becoming increasingly scarce, and people are going to be less willing to share. And we're seeing these debates pop up all across the state, whether it's the tunnel that's been proposed in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, or just the water restrictions that we all faced over the past 3 years when we had the drought before this big water year. So, I think the people up there, they want to share, but you know, the changing climate may not allow them to share as much.
Carlos, that brings me to Native and Indigenous communities who have historically, you know, been overlooked, and there's been an impact as well. You spoke with some of the Native Mountain Maidu. What did they say about the importance of water and how climate change has impacted their lands?
You know, one of the people that we spoke with, Trina Cunningham, she was, I guess, one of the tribal chairperson a couple of couple of years ago, and she mentioned that most of their essence, their spiritual, their community revolved around the river and around these creeks that that fed life and gave them life. And we were, you know, trying to really convey that through images, and we ended up talking to her, and she sang their water song for us. Initially, we were trying to see if they were going to do their spring ceremony, which is done at the river's edge. And unfortunately, there was just too much. They had to cancel it, I believe, during COVID, and had not really started doing it again. But it really is emblematic of how connected they are, and how these lands and regions surrounding the water and, you know, even the meadow that was returned to them from PG&E several years ago, I think it was 2019, how it's being restored, seeing the care that's going into this is really, it's beautiful to see, because you can see the regrowth, the regeneration of the types of plant life and animals that they need to survive. And I think it's really an amazing change to see how much that water has affected that, and how these folks who are building beaver dam analogs are impacting the slowing down of the water through these meadows and rebuilding them.
Yeah, there's still a lot to learn, even with all the preparation and research that you did ahead of this trip.
Yeah, it you know, a lot of it was done on the fly, I'll admit that. But we did do a lot of you know, phone calls and, you know, text messages, emails, and just prepping ourselves to get, you know, into being able to really, you know, communicate appropriately with all of the groups involved, because a lot of that is, you know, really, you know, getting people to trust you and letting you not just into the Native American communities, but also into these places where, you know, there's, like I said, the Dixie Fire, the devastation there. How do you approach that, knowing that it's going to be a struggle on a lot of different fronts?
Curtis, I only have about 30 seconds left. What would you like readers to feel and know when they're finished with this digital piece?
Well, I think there's a few takeaways here, but I'll just mention one. And I think this was top of mind when we were reporting up there, is that we've seen these increasing weather extremes in California in recent years. And just being up there during this really wet period when people had endured storms and some places flooding and closed roads because of landslides, they were still talking about the drought, and they were worrying about when the next drought was going to come. And I think this awareness of the changing climate and even anxiety is really something.
Curtis and Carlos, thank you. Thanks for the trip and sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Curtis Alexander is the natural resources reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Carlos Avila Gonzalez is a photographer and multimedia producer. We have posted a link to their work at capradio.org/insight. And that's it for Insight today. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.